Yes. So these, let me see, can I do this? Yes, I can do this. So these studies are, they go back about maybe year and a half, 2 years. So it was during the time period when I was between LBNL and my current job, I was doing some freelance work for a few manufacturers and also at AirUp again. So these are both studies that I did while I was at AirUp. Part one is a model of manual control for a single shade and a single context. And I guess that'll make a little bit more sense as I go through it. First, the preface is predicting manual shade operation is a challenge that we experience in both energy modeling and daylight modeling. We have some understanding of events that trigger people to lower and raise shades. We have little understanding of how long a shade stays down after somebody has lowered it, and that varies based on user types of events, that sort of thing. So in AirUp, we got some money to buy random sensors in the San Francisco office. So one of the things we bought was a drawstring potentiometer, which is like a little coil of string. When you can pull it out, and then when you like give it slack, it pulls it back in, and it has a potentiometer to tell you exactly how much string is pulled out. So we put that on a floor by a window, we attach the bottom to a shade, and then you know exactly the position of the shade within a few millimeters of accuracy. So you have really good information about where the shade is. And then we also measure some things like transmitted facade irradiance, work plane illuminance, temperature, humidity, mean radiant temperature, right at the desk that was by that shade. Where we put this was on like the southeast facing facade of the building. Outside of the window, there were two buildings across the way. And what would happen pretty much every day is that the sun would be behind the building on the left, and it would come out between the two buildings, and for about an hour it would be shining on the people that were at the desk, and then it would go behind the building to the right. So we had a couple of very predictable, very strong events. Like it was very noticeable when the sun came out and when it went back. So at this window where the shade was, there were two people that were sitting there. They were essentially facing each other with the window to the left or right, depending on which way they were facing. They were both lighting designers. They were both keenly aware of the benefits of daylight, both socially conscious. They felt a duty to provide daylight to the rest of the office. And they were both aware that we were measuring their blind use, which might be the biggest contributing factor. So they were possibly the most active blind users in the world. And what I mean by that is, so here, this green line is the shade position. The blue line is the other shade that we monitored that never got used, so we shouldn't have monitored that. And this red line is the transmitted facade irradiance. And so you can see when the sun came out from behind the building, the facade irradiance jumps up, and then right at the same time, and this you would expect, like when the sun comes out, you lower the shade. But then when the sun went behind the other building, look at that, it's like at the same time, it's like they were waiting for it to happen in this case. And here's one where it didn't happen quite so quickly. So in this one, there was about 83 minutes. And so, you know, this happened right about at lunchtime, so maybe they had already gone out to lunch, and then they came back after lunch and then readjusted their blind. So there is some occupancy effects that confound the shade movements. So for a period of 3 months, we observed 37 occurrences of where, you know, they were in the building. It was on a Saturday or Sunday, and it was a sunny day. So we had these distinct times of when the sun was on the facade and not. And we were able to fit those 37 occurrences to a log normal distribution using an online fit method. And so the median time delay between when the sun went behind the second building and when the shade was raised was about 25 minutes. Actually, if we go back, we can see there were some times when, like, so the biggest, I think, was this one, was nearly 400 minutes. And then the one I showed you was this one with zero, but there's a lot of other, like, single-digit response times. So then, to see how good the fit is, I think the best way to show is to use the cumulative distribution. So on the x-axis, we have the delay interval, and the y-axis is the, like, percent of, I guess, or the amount of times that we're in that delay or less. So the black line there is the log normal fit, and the red line is our actual observed data. And so you can see it kind of fits pretty closely. So now that we have this fitlog neuron distribution, what we can do is we can use it in simulations. So if we were to invert the log normal cumulative distribution function, then we can use a random number generator between 0 and 1, and then find the corresponding delay. And so for different days, we can have different delays as a result of this. So now, like I said, we have a model of line use for shade use for a very specific context. So if you ever have a building where you've got two, you know, buildings opposite it with about an hour of sunshine in between, and you happen to have two lighting designers that are sitting there and are very active with their shade use, then I've got a model for you. But so we're missing a lot. But I think what this demonstrates is a kind of a, maybe not a path forward, but we, you know, a lot of simulations, we don't know how long to leave the shades down. For some of them, for some simulations, we leave them down for the rest of the day. For others, we trigger it almost immediately. And so if we could get more observations like this, different blind users, different contexts, we might be able to determine a way to simulate delay. So part two, optimizing grouping of PV panels for a large and unusual rooftop PV installation. So this project landed on my desk maybe about a year and a half ago. So it's a building in the Bay Area that's being constructed, and it has this unusual roof shape with some clearstories in it. And they're going to clad the entire roof with PV panels, so using a system that's like a shingle-type PV system. And so it would be about 45,000 PV panels over this entire roof. What the challenges are is that because of the shape, every PV panel is aimed in a different direction. Slightly different, but different. And then there's also the clearstories that provide shadowing of some of the areas of the roof. And the challenge that creates is that with PVs, when you have a bunch of them grouped in an electrical circuit, they are limited, the production of the group is limited by the least performing PV. So if you have one in the shade, it limits the production of all the ones that aren't in the shade. So what we needed to do was step one, to find a good way to group these panels so that you have panels that have similar ratings at similar times and similar electrical group. And then two, is estimate the hourly energy production of the system throughout the year. Actually, what they wanted me to do was step two, and I said, well, we should really look at step one. So this is just a quick way of saying, like, each roof bay has 2 to 8 groups. Most of the bigger ones have 8 groups, and each group can be between 35 and 220 panels based on the requirements of the system that they were using. So that 35 to 220 is important. That'll come back. They thought one of the difficult things would be actually running the simulations for all of the 45,000 PV panels, and I said, no, that's actually not hard at all. With the new Radiance tools, we can use, and so I put up the workflow here, but it's pretty simple. You have a point in the center, you sample to get the normal of the panel, then you use our flux matrix to generate your daylight coefficients, then you multiply that by your sky matrix, and you get your annual radiance thing. Oh, but the one key is that you have to use the minus 01 option, so you're using the full solar spectrum rather than just the visible. So we're going to just look closely at this one roof section, bay 5, and I've called out 7 of the PV panels that are located on that in different areas to show different amounts of the radiance. So in order to group them, what I did was I picked out about, I guess, 6 days of sunny days in the weather file, and then created an irradiance vector for all of the panels for those 6 days, which gave about 73 values. This is just looking at one of the days. Left to right is time of day. The numbers at the bottom are just the value in the larger vector of 73. And you can see there's quite a bit of difference. So this B panel, it gets shaded from the clear story that's here. So you can see that it drops off in the later in the day when it's getting that shadowing. And then, let's see, the A panel, which is facing a little bit towards that way, it gets more of the sun earlier in the day and then falls off. Oh no, sorry, it gets less sun earlier in the day and falls off later in the day. So there's some variation from panel to panel. What we use to group it is I take those vectors of 73 values for all 1,200 panels and send that to a clustering algorithm that then says, you know, we need 8 groups for this pane. And it spits out these clusters based on relative position within that 73-dimensional space. And the trouble with the clustering algorithms that are available when you apply to this problem is that you can't constrain the size of the groups in any way. So when the result we got was we had 554 in this one orange group, which takes up most of the middle, and then we've only got 17 in the purple group, which is kind of like along that clear story there. That's what I just said. So then we had to find a way to reassign panels. So what we did is we first would calculate the centroid of each cluster in that 73-dimensional space. If a zone has more than 220 panels, we move the panels that are furthest away from that centroid to their next closest cluster. Then we recompute the cluster centroids and then put all the panels back in the closest to the new. So the idea is we want to make sure that it kind of makes sense in the end. Like if you just reassign, then you've got some panels that could maybe be in a better cluster. So here is how it happened in action. Actually, maybe have a quick look at it and think about how you would reassign to the clusters. Before you see the answer, what would you do? You've got the orange here, that needs to have a lot less. You need more in the purple. So just mull it over, come up with an idea in your mind. I won't call out people, so just think about it. Okay, time's up. So here's the first reassignment. So with the red shrinks down to almost nothing, the orange loses some, but most of them get put back in the reassignment, but the orange has shrunk. And then we go another one, the red's gotten back up, and then another one. This is like an old school animation where you just click the slide from one to the other. So we're almost there, we're nearly there. It's going the wrong way. Here we go. Oh, we're almost there. We just need more in the purple. So there we go, now we got them in the purple. So here's where we started. So now how many of you said I would split the orange into two groups and maybe make the purple a little bit bigger? Was that? Yeah? No? Okay, so that's essentially what happened between the beginning and the end. The orange was split into two, maybe got a little bit smaller. The blue and brown groups there grew quite a bit and shifted to make up for the loss of the red. And then this is what it looks for, like for the whole group, all PPU zones. And then step two, estimating hourly energy production. Now that we have the groups, I use the hybrid PV watts radiance method. So PV watts is an online PV calculation tool. It's published by NREL, or I think, yeah, they're the PV people. And it's a really good tool. It takes into account temperature of the panel, off-normal transmission of the PV cover glass, the nonlinear inverter efficiency. So it's a really good simulation tool for PVs. It has an API, so you can, if you have got 45,000 different orientations, you can just send one at a time through the API with a script, and it can handle that. What it can't do, though, is account for local shading, and that's where radiance comes in, because with radiance, we can calculate the hourly shading factor. So essentially, what we did was we took, for each panel, we would run calculate the radiance hourly for an unshaded array, an unshaded panel, and then add the shading elements, the clear stories, to then calculate it again with the shading. Then we would divide one by the other, get a shading factor, and then multiply that by the DC power output. Same seven panels, and there are their tilts and azimuths. First, what I'm showing is we wanted to verify that there was agreement in irradiance on the panels between PV watts and radiance. So these are those seven panels. PV watts is on the y-axis, and radiance is on, no, sorry, PV watts is on the x-axis, radiance is on the y-axis. And we see pretty good agreement. The ones that have higher tilt angles have a little bit less agreement, and that comes from the sky models. There's a slightly different sky model used between the two. This isn't a comparison between PV watts anymore. This is radiance against radiance, but this is the shaded versus the unshaded. So the panel B, which is by the clear story, here, it has the most shading, and you can see that by like the values that are down lower on the y-axis. So this is why one of the reasons I asked Greg for that our mixed up feature. So this is the old way that what I had to do was I would take the unshaded matrix, the shaded matrix, and the PV watts DC output matrix, which I generated through the script, and I would have to read them in, make them into a long, skinny, like spaghetti matrix, one column, all three of them, and then I would do my rcalc, and I had to put in something to make sure, an if statement to make sure we didn't have any divide by zero errors. Then I would get the result, and I have to reform it into the matrix that I wanted, and then I transposed it and sent it out. Now all that can be handled with a simple rmxnop calculation that even takes care of the division by zero errors. So that was the reason I wanted it, and I think when I mentioned it, Stephen seconded it with because he had a better reason for it, because you know PV calculations aren't done all that much. So then we just take the DC output for the zones, reduce for every hour to the minimum panel, limit it at the 15 kilowatts, which is the MPPT, apply inverter efficiency, and then we get our total annual consumption. I can't share the total annual production, but what I can do is a quick comparison between the clustered groups and then just a simple grid arrangement. And with the clustered groups, we've got almost 8% more output over the course of a year. And so at this scale, without giving too much away, that's like several hundred megawatt hours of power produced. So it made a difference. Now, I'm not sure if they've actually implemented that. Because I'm not the person who had to put that on drawings to get to be wired up that way, but we'll see. So then I guess I should just mention that I was working at Arup and then LBNL, and now I'm working at this company, Helio, which makes electrochromic glass. And hopefully in the coming years I'll be able to present about that. I didn't really have anything to say or that I could say at the moment. But this is I set up this S here where the drill is. But this is our demo suite in our office in Hayward, which is an industrial park, not the most beautiful place to work or you know, commute to, but it's it's a nice office to work in with Haley. Okay. Thank you. I haven't finished mine yet, actually.
Oh, okay. Well, you've got this stuff, obviously.
Yeah, I got far enough to do this.
How did you actually implement this clustering? Did you just use any tools, or did you write that from scratch?
I just used Octave, and there's a simple package for clustering. So clustering is pretty easy to implement with Octave. Some of the more, like, the neural networks gets a little bit trickier to implement without having a package to do it. With this situation, I couldn't think of a way to apply a neural network to that, but maybe if I knew a little bit, maybe when I finish the Coursera course, I'll have an idea.
Yeah, I'd like to see machine learning is getting engaged in the attention in this field. I think it's a really novel idea. You can see if they actually implement that.
Yeah, I don't, I want to, it's been, I haven't been involved in about a year now, so I been meaning to call them up and ask, but Eleanor, did you have a question?
Yeah, so for your first study, I can't remember if you had this did you actually come up with a model of the height of the shade?
No. You might have noticed that in this slide, the shade wasn't, let me go big, the shade wasn't up all the way before, but then they raised it up all the way, and the blue shade is not up all the way, but usually that was just like, you know, a few inches at the top, and so the shade never, like, they wouldn't really do much intermediary. It was kind of like mostly the way up or at about the level of the desk. There wasn't very much in between during the observations that we have. No, the log normal fit didn't include shade.
So it's a mesh shape, or?
Yeah, it's like a woven fabric mecha shape type thing.
So the metrics committee
is
trying to come up with a managed shape algorithm?
Yeah.
Incorporate both, you know, when it's down, when it's back up, but also the shape height, and it'd be interesting to be sharing.
Yeah, I mean, this, is, again, very active users, so I'm not sure if it's a good way to simulate the rest of it, but it's an approach that could be useful. Any other questions? No, I think it's time for our special presentation. I'm excited to find out what this is.